I am from beyond. Listen, and all you desire will be yours. Welcome to Spider-Dan and the Secret Boys. Prepare for battle.
Welcome to Prattle World. I am your host, the ever-amazing, ever-spectacular Spider-Dan. And in this podcast, I spotlight entertainment's best-kept secrets that a mainstream audience may find boring. And welcome to another edition of Secret Ball Stories, where I invite guests to count down a personal top five list in high-fidelity fashion. And welcome again to another inclusion in the Spider-Man month. I hope you're enjoying it so far. We've got one more segment after this one, so get them in, get downloading. So I've invited a very good friend today who is, I think he's well-versed in Spider-Man lore, I like to think so, and other stuff, sci-fi.
It'd be awkward if I wasn't.
No, yes, it would be pretty awkward. I'd be like, oh, I've got the wrong person for this. Oh dear, I've chosen poorly, much like Indy. And no, not Indy. Indy chose well. He chose well.
Indy did chose well.
He chose well. What's the other guy's name? What's his name?
Donovan.
Donovan, that's it.
He chose poorly.
Oh, he did. Yes, he did. So I've invited my good friend.
Spoilers.
Spoilers for a 30-year-old film. It's 30. It'll be 30 this year, won't it? Isn't it? 89?
Yeah.
Yes. What a great one. Hopefully this won't be our last crusade. So let's begin. Welcome. This has taken a very long time to introduce you in a very awkward way, but welcome, Sean Mason.
Hello.
How the hell are you?
I'm fine, yeah.
Yeah?
I'm really tired and warm.
As the rest of England has been posting all over social media.
Yeah,
we all share that. Yeah. I was in the post office this morning and the guy was talking about the humidity for about 10 minutes. And yeah. I was like, that's great. Can I have my package, please? I want to watch my Spider-Man DVDs.
I had a horrible realisation last night as well about climate change.
Ooh.
In the on an individual level, we all think we're Chief Brody in Jaws, but as a species, we're the mayor. And
what a great analogy.
And that's not a good thing.
No, we kind of, yeah. I mean, that's probably the best analogy I've heard of climate change and people's attitudes towards climate change. You know,
I can drink paper straws, but I'm not going to close the beach. It's the 4th of July.
Don't be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Don't be absolutely ridiculous. Amazing. I've noticed that, you know, in the last year and a half, that the weather is extremely different and extreme to in all measures, cold. And I mean, I didn't have double glazing for quite a while in this flat. And during the summer, I'm fine. But, you know, in the winter, I was frozen, absolutely frozen. And I had to leave the heating on like 3 days just to heat up it, just to like a normal standard, like a livable standard. Anyway, enough with politics, enough with
the impending end of the world.
Well, I mean, we Spider-Man deals with a lot of world ending. There's a really good story actually called Ends of the Earth, where Spider-Man faces the Sinister Six, and Dr. Octopus is trying to, I think he's trying to speed up the greenhouse effect.
Yeah,
greenhouse gas. I think it's Dan Slott run. I think.
Yeah, but is that Dan Slott when it was alternating writers?
No, I think that
was just Dan Slott.
I think that's when it turned over to just Dan Slott, I think.
Right.
Could be wrong. But it's a really good storyline. It's got all the Sinister Six, and he teams up with Black Cat, Silver Sable, all those kind of characters as well. So really, really good, actually. Let's crack on. So I brought you on to list your top five underrated Spider-Man villains. So not necessarily the obvious ones. So Green Goblin, Dr. Octopus, Carnage, Venom, all those biggins. We want the ones that are kind of little off the kind of on the outer rim of his, and he's got quite a few villains, much like kind of Batman, lots of weird and wacky ones. Do you want to talk about his kind of huge rogues gallery that he has?
What I really find interesting is how many are animal based. If he has an animal based power, everything must be animal based.
I mean, there's a lot of characters that, I mean, I think a good way to start with heroes is do like a kind of dark mirror aspect. I think that's a great place to start.
but don't stay there, because if you get stuck in it, it's not very interesting after a while.
It was interesting as well, because I thought I'd Google it just to see who I was missing.
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten, actually, as much as we say, oh yeah, keep varying it up.
Yeah.
Really, a lot of Spidey's villains are just variations on
the older ones.
Five types.
Yeah. So we've got like goblins, symbiotes,
clones.
Yeah.
Animals. Electric people.
Yeah. There's quite a few electric, sand-based people or elements.
Yeah. Elemental.
Yeah. There's a few of those. So you've got Hydra-Man, Sandman. One of my favorite ones is where they kind of had a fight and they became just a mud thing.
Yeah.
It's just a combination mud thing that it was like, I don't even fight this. It's just like, yeah. And I think it was like, that was it. They're dating the same woman. And then they both clash and become this mud thing. And then she thinks she can make loads of money off it. Because it's like this kind of King Kong thing. Bizarre little story, but I loved it. So many kind of groups of... There's a lot of kind of horror-based villains. And kind of monster-based, tragic... I mean, a lot of accidents, isn't there? There's a surprising amount of accidents.
Again, it boils down to that dark mirror thing. So yeah, he is a scientific accident. There's a lot of scientific accidents that he ends up having to fight.
Yeah, like Dr. Octopus is like the classic, lizard as well. There's so many, you know, I'm something of a scientist myself, you know, sort of thing, where, you know, they're all kind of, I mean, even the movies, they're all basically
born, all of these,
they're all basically kind of scientists for the most part. And I think it does kind of help to a point. I think there are kind of tiers, and I'm like in my five, I've done kind of subsections. So I'm choosing one from every kind of several subsections of his villains, kind of give us kind of a, but it's kind of talking about those kind of types of villains, but within that one specific character. Should we get started?
Let's get started.
Let's go for it. So you are the guest.
Yes.
So I would like you to go first. What is your number? Have you got a particular order? Are you counting down? Or
I'll start at five.
Yeah, start at five. Let's go.
Now, my fifth pick, now technically, again, variations thereof, so it's one specific variant, is Dr. Olivia Octavius from Spider-Verse.
Okay, yeah.
Because I think she was one of the best. I mean, everything about that.
Amazing movie. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, it's an Oscar-winning movie. Go out and see it.
If you haven't seen it, I've just spoiled one of the characters. I just love the way they did Doc Ock in that.
Yeah.
And how subtly it was set up. And when you watch it again,
actually
all the clues are there, right down to her glasses, the shape of her glasses.
You're right.
The shape of her light fittings, everything is a visual clue.
When I saw it again, I was like, if you look carefully when they're watching in the school.
Yes, you see the start.
You see the start of the name, but you don't see the rest of it. And you're like, of course. And it's like, you know, what a great kind of twist and a great character and a great take on a classic character.
Yeah, and it's a take that I'd love to see in other media. I'd love to see that character done again and done elsewhere. Mm.
I remember back in the old 90s, the heyday of Spider-Man. I mean, to be honest, there's a lot in the 90s I really like.
Yeah.
And there's some that's not so great.
I think that's fair of every era.
Yeah, I think that's fair of every comic book era. But there was, during the kind of clone saga, there was Dr. Carolyn Trainor, who was...
Yeah.
Who Dr. Octopus is killed by Kane, the evil clone.
And she was just Lady.
I think she was. I think
we weren't very good at naming female characters in the 90s,
especially like.
Or now.
I mean, we do get. I think jokingly they did Lady Stiltman. I think that was a joke. That was like an obvious joke. I think
Stiltman, pretty much a joke in the first place.
True. Yes. But very almost
sorry,
weird.
Stiltman fans.
Sorry, Stiltman. Yeah, because there's so many Stiltman fans out there. But yeah, I mean, he's not too dissimilar. I mean, telescopic tentacles, telescopic leg.
Yeah.
It's not too dissimilar. Daredevil was meant to be a new Spider-Man, effectively. But yeah, why have you picked this version of Dr. Octopus?
I think really because everyone who's seen the film loved that take and that surprise, because I love the way she was set up as kind of maybe a slightly lovable, dorky scientist,
kooky,
not really a threat, and then when she turns it's a full the way it's animated, the way it's performed vocally, it's such a brilliant, complete switch. Mm. And I just really liked it. But it's a shame that off the back of that film, Spider-Man was being reprinted.
Yep.
The Spider-Man annual for this year that just came out is dedicated to Spider-Ham.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been lots of kind of other media about those elements.
Mm.
But I feel like that one, I've heard that, that take has been overlooked. Now, I think partly because it's very specifically for that film.
Mm.
And Doc Ock's status in...
Does she die?
I can't remember.
I feel like she gets...
She might get...
Knocks her out. Somebody, like, knocks her out or sends her flying or something.
Yeah.
But, and it's kind of like... Is it, it might be Miles. I think Miles might come in and knock her flying.
Yes.
Possibly. Because I think he's invisible. And then he...
Yeah.
Something like...
I don't think she gets...
I don't think... No.
Because I hope that film...
I hope not. I watched this video. Weird, very odd video. Sorry, I'm just playing footsie
That's
with you there.
Fine, yeah.
It's, I mean, we're in my bedroom. So this is what happens now to all my guests. Footsie is played. I read it. I watched I don't know if you're... Are you familiar with, like, Bob Chipman on, like, YouTube? He kind of... He does, like, reviews and various... Movie Bob. I think he's known as Movie Bob. In my...
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a really unusual kind of hot take on this character. He said in the comics, Aunt May marries Dr. Octopus at one point. I think he's trying to get a nuclear reactor she's inherited.
Yeah.
Yeah. Comics.
we've all inherited.
Yeah. It happens. And then, you know, manages to resurrect the ghost of Hammerhead. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how. But it happens. But yes. And he says when Olivia Octavius breaks into the house, and May sees it and goes, oh, great, it's Liv. He thinks that it's very subtle, but he thinks, I mean, it's really subtle, but he thinks they have a lesbian relationship and they're exes, and which, I mean, it's not out of the realms of possibility. And obviously, movies have hinted about things like that in the past.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It was quite a, that was a deep, like almost like quite a deep investigation would need to go into that, I think.
Yeah, it's not a take I kind of noticed.
No.
But I did like that.
I mean, why not? Yeah, I mean, why not?
God, no.
Absolutely. But it wasn't, I don't think it was blatant to myself or most of the cinema going audience.
It just seemed more like, to me, that they'd
known each other and just
because Aunt May in that film is so switched on to
the villains
and the whole world of Spider-Man.
Spider Cave, basically, in there as well.
I think it was just more of an eye roll.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's another villain. Yeah. She's back. I really like the design of the tentacles as well.
Yeah.
The kind of almost jelly, like almost squid-like or something. Or it's very unusual, almost like there's some sort of fluid going through them. I don't know.
Yeah, and everything about that design was just so good. And I would love at some point the comics to... I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility for, I don't know, a daughter or a niece or...
I
mean, Peter has a sister he's only recently discovered a couple of years ago. So.
That was good read, actually. Is it Family Matters?
It was Family Business.
Family Business, that's it, yeah. That was a fun little read.
Yeah, it was a really nice... That kind of graphic novel imprint that Marvel kind of...
did for a little while. I think it was they did season one, didn't they?
Season one, and then they got Warren Ellison to do an Avengers...
Oh, that was good. That was really good. Mike McCone, the artwork?
Yes.
I think. Oh, that was good, yeah.
But then it was kind of like, where do these fit in continuity or not? Because that was meant to be kind of like the films, but it was kind of meant to tease you in if you didn't know where to start with Avengers comics, but you were watching the films, you could buy that.
Yeah, I think I read one where it was an X-Men one called No More Humans,
which was a tie-in to an X book that had just happened.
Is it Age of X or something
Age of
like
X.
That?
So, so then it became so obviously that's kind of like a what if story. But then Family Business was like, is this canon or not?
And didn't they bring her back recently?
Chip Starsky brought for his spectacular Spider-Man run.
I've heard that's really good.
It's really good.
I've not started it, but I'm going to.
Yeah, no, that is good. I think they did four volumes and then someone else took it over and then it got cancelled.
As is the way.
Everything's
getting cancelled at the moment. Swamp Thing and Deadly Class, that got cancelled as well. I think we might be... I know a lot of people talk about the comic book movies kind of you know, oh, it's dead. The comic book, you know, movie is now dead. The,
no, it's
well, we're, fine. Franchise fatigue. Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
No.
Look at Endgame. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah, we're good.
But I do feel maybe there's maybe too many comic book TV shows currently to keep up with on the various different platforms.
I don't know if it's... well, we're getting into territory for one of my later...
Oh, okay. Okay, cool, cool. Do you want to say? You want to save that then?
We'll save that.
So I'll go with my number five.
Fair enough.
My number five, he represents what I like to call the subsection of Spider-Man's villains or any kind of comic book character's villains where they are the loser villains. Mm. So they're kind of, they're not the megalomaniacs, not the masterminds. They're kind of almost a bit thuggish,
yeah.
Kind of they're just out for a you know, a big score. They just want to kind of retire, mm-hmm. do their thing. They've got the tech, you know, they've got tech they've either invented or it's been provided or they've inherited or something, and or powers, you name it, and they just want to make some money. So it's usually, how do I make money? I rob a bank. You know, it's very quick, very easy. And I'm going to pick the lesser-known Spider-Man villain, Boomerang, because I was kind of introduced to this character in a little mini-series that I got when I was very young called The Deadly Foes of Spider-Man. And this was really kind of groundbreaking for me because it was the first story I ever read where it was from a villain's perspective, like the villain... Mm. The villains are the protagonists in the story. And Spider-Man's very, you know, he's in it very little. Obviously, he's in there. But you don't spend a lot of time with him. He's there purely to be an antagonist. And I found that really fascinating as a young man. You know, obviously, this has been done to death, you know, Dirty Dozen, all those kind of things. Like, we have these horrible villainous characters that... But you're with them all the way. You want them to succeed. You want them to murder that guy or kill that person or rob that bank. You know, you want them to get away with their big scheme. You know, the Rhino in this is just trying to get money for his family in Russia. Speed Demon just wants to get laid, and that's his motivation. Boomerang just wants to make some money. Beetle's trying to get revenge. You know, you've got all these kind of, it's a good kind of collection of these kind of loser villains. Yeah. Even the Shocker is so afraid of being killed by the Scourge of the Underworld, who's basically a kind of Punisher type character, mm-hmm. who's killing off supervillains. He kind of has this kind of, he's one of the best characters in it because he has this kind of, all of a sudden, he, you know, he breaks through his kind of all this fear and doubt and everything, and just almost kills Spider-Man with, you know. And Shocker is one of those. He was very close to being in here instead.
Yeah.
But I think Boomerang's got something about him that's quite. I would recommend any of the Foes books. I think Lethal Foes of Spider-Man is not so good. I read that recently, but Superior Foes of Spider-Man and The Deadly Foes of Spider-Man, both really cool. But yeah, it's a really weird gimmick. Boomerangs are a weird, you know, they're not really that cool or interesting. There were hunting elements in like Australia. They would use them to hunt. He was introduced in a Hulk comic, and he had the most hideous costume I've ever seen in my life. It was horrendous. John Byrne redesigned him, gave him a much more kind of svelte kind of look. Boomerangs attached to his body everywhere.
Yeah.
But he had jet boots, so kind of he gets one over on Captain Boomerang there.
Currently a very kind of streamlined.
Yeah, it's kind of a white and black visor. He's got the boomerangs coming out of the back, and he was in the Thunderbolts as well. And before I knew about Bullseye, before Bullseye was even on my radar, Daredevil radar sense, pun included, he in Deadly Foes, he says, anything in my hands is a deadly weapon. So he's throwing, you know, pennies at people, and they're like, ah! You know, all that sort of stuff. And I thought, what an amazing, cool concept. I realised... That's been stolen from Bullseye, but by the time I thought it was really cool.
At least they're stealing from in-house.
Yes, that's true. They're stealing from other characters, but obviously, and I think later on again, he kind of like I like these kind of. They are lovable because they can just never get anything right. They're tripping over, they're falling over, they're failing, and all the kind of failure makes them more kind of have this endearing quality about them. And quite recently, I believe, Boomerang actually moved in.
Well,
with Pete Parker as a roommate.
So the current Nick Spencer run, which is really good, it's just finished its first kind of event book, Hunted Craven story. Peter, so post the Dan Slott run, kind of...
He's lost his company.
He lost everything.
Everything's gone.
Completely reset.
Yeah.
And needed a flatmate. What he is with Robbie Thompson is one of his...
Oh, is it Randy?
Randy
Robertson.
Yes.
Joe Robbie Robinson's dad.
Yeah, that's who I mean.
Yeah,
yes.
That's his dad. Yeah, cool. That's fair enough.
They've got very similar names.
They do.
So that's one of his flatmates. And then they needed a third. And it was
Boomerang. And I believe neither of them know. Well, Spider-Man knows, doesn't he? He's aware. Yes.
Boomerang doesn't know.
Doesn't know.
There's a really nice two. But what I'm really liking about the Nick Spencer run is as much as he's gone straight into, there's kind of an arc. There have been kind of two issue stories. Kind of how it used to be, where you could just pick up those two issues.
Read those two issues, be happy, have a complete story. With other stuff being teased.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And kind of what comics needs to be more of, I think, is less demanding on
digestible.
More digestible.
Yeah, digestible chunks that you can... And I think that's the same with TV and, you know, a lot of other kind of media. For me, I prefer to watch a movie over a TV show because... TV shows, not unlike Game of Thrones, you can watch them for years and still be disappointed with how they end or disappointed how that whole last series was. That's why I like the kind of just, I can concentrate. If it's shit, it's shit, but it's only been 2 hours of my life.
Yeah, but although now you said that, it has reminded me, as much as I'm really enjoying Nick Spencer's Spider-Man run, he still hasn't finished Morning Glories for...
Right.
And that
annoys you.
That has annoyed me. Because that was kind of set up as he knew how many issues it was going to run. He knew where it was going to go. When's it going to finish? Yeah, because I don't think it ever got officially cancelled.
No.
But it's also at the point now where new readers probably aren't going to care.
Jump on.
I'm not going to get an ending.
I mean, he may come back and do like a mini-series maybe or something.
I hope so. I hope it gets resolved. Even if he just truncates it. Yeah, what were we talking about?
We were talking about Boomerang, don't worry. We're talking about Boomerang, don't worry.
There's a really good... so warm.
He's warm.
There's a really good kind of two-issue... I think it was two.
Is it kind of like an odd couple situation?
Yeah, where Peter's kind of down on his luck. He's because when he got his PhD, technically... It was Dr. Ock that got it.
Who was in his mind as the Superior Spider-Man.
Yeah, so he's had loads of these things stripped away from him. Boomerang decides, come out for drink. But he takes him to the villain's bar.
Oh, the bar with no name.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it's a story about Peter Parker surrounded by some of his greatest...
villains.
Or, you know, less great villains. But everyone in there... would have been in for it.
And they're all the kind of loser villains, the lesser known, the B-listers, C-listers, Z-listers.
Really kind of have more of a grudge in some ways because as far as they're concerned, they are just the blue-collar guys.
Exactly, blue-collar criminals, yeah. What's the working-class heroes or working-class villains, if you will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rightio, I think we talked about Boomerang probably far too much, but I did want to mention a few of the kind of villains within that kind of...
Fair enough.
That kind of loser subsection. So Shocker, I've mentioned Beetle. Slide, who has a frictionless suit, so he slides about everywhere. The Kangaroo is a Stan Lee villain, believe it or not. Spot, who can open interdimensional portals and looks like a Dalmatian. The Gibbon, he's a Gibbon. He's a Gibbon, another Stan Lee one. And another Stan Lee one, the Looter, who was also known as Meteor Man for a little bit.
Right.
Yeah, some loser villains there. So I think we're covered. Can we go on to your number four? You ready?
Yeah, we'll go on to number four. So this is my first kind of... slightly esoteric picks, in that my number four most underrated villain is executives.
Ah.
Whether they be movie executives or Marvel.
So please go on, because I'm really interested to hear what you say on this.
Okay, as much as I just praise Nick Spencer's run, because it is very good.
Yeah.
Marvel has a real problem, going back to what we were talking about before, of overexposure.
Oh, God, yeah. Tell me about it. Jesus.
We've got Amazing Spider-Man at the moment, but we've also got Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man has just started, which I've heard is really good.
Mm.
But Amazing Spider-Man already comes out twice a year. For my wallet, doesn't go that far. Not to mention all of the other various Spidey books.
Mm. And imagine if you're buying all the variants as well.
We're trying to get... Yeah, and then you've got your point one issues and all that.
Yeah.
So, I think it's trying to do too much in the comics.
Yeah.
I'd rather just have less.
Less is more.
Less is more.
Less is more.
And, you know, then other books would be allowed to kind of breathe, because there are other smaller character books that I would love to give and spend my money on.
I heard West Coast Avengers got cancelled recently. I heard that was quite good. But again, cancelled because, you know, people are buying 5 Spider-Man books.
Yeah.
We don't need 5 Spider-Man books. The Punisher had 5 or 6 books in the 90s. You don't need that many books about guys shooting criminals. You just don't.
And also you get to the point where, okay, if you want to do like a big important story in another, but it can't really be referenced in the other because it's 2 different writers.
Exactly, yeah.
It's all meant to be happening at the same time.
Mm. I mean, obviously there's some, like back in the day in the studio, when Marvel would be in an office, you would, you know, Roger Stern will be writing Spectacular Spider-Man and, you know, Jerry Conway will be writing Amazing Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And they could talk and go, oh, by the way, just, this is what I'm doing this month.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Just so we can kind of just reference each other's books. So if people are interested, they will go buy that.
Yeah.
But now, because everyone works from home, basically, artists and the writers, they don't meet, they don't talk as much.
They just have the one, the kind of Marvel summit every year.
Yeah, exactly. And it's very rare that they see anybody. Like, I interviewed some people at Oldham Comic Con and they were like, this is amazing because we never get together anymore.
Yeah.
This is an amazing thing that we can do this. Because they just don't talk.
So that's my big issue with Marvel at the moment, is it's cost me too much money.
You need to get Marvel Unlimited.
Well, yeah, I probably kind of do.
Yeah.
If only from a space perspective.
Space, and, I mean, £50 for the year, you've already, you know, you read 20 books, you've paid for it.
Yeah.
You know, I only have it because, I mean, I do buy physical. I still buy physical as well. But again, I live in a one-bedroom flat, and you can see it's already crammed as it is with the amount I've got here. And I imagine your place is much the same.
Well, yeah, I'm lucky enough to live in a house, but like I was saying to you before we start recording this, I've not been able to play the Spider-Man game on PS4 because I can't physically get to the PlayStation right now.
Because of all the stuff.
Because of all the other stuff in the way. So yeah, that's my one issue with Marvel Comics, is less, just do less so I can buy more.
Yeah. So is it, are these some of these kind of like, I mean, they do it with movies as well, you know.
I was going to get out.
Yeah, they tend to, especially Avi Arad tends to throw in like a lot of villains into his movies that don't necessarily need them, you know.
It all started going wrong, Spider-Man. Luckily, it started going right again, but obviously Spider-Man 3 was the point where that's when I learned you shouldn't listen to the fans.
Yeah.
Because the fans wanted Venom, but that's not the story Sam Raimi was telling. So
he only likes the classic 60s ones anyway.
Yeah, so you end up with a version of Venom that no one likes in a story that now no longer quite works because it's trying to please too many people at once.
It's pulled apart by too many cooks. There are some great moments in there.
There's
some fun to be had.
There's fun to be had with Spider-Man 3, but I'd have loved to seen Raimi's take on Vulture, being allowed to do Spider-Man 4.
Yeah. There was rumours recently they were going to do a comic book version of it, but it's the J.J. Abrams comic that they're doing.
Yes, yeah,
with his son.
A whole other story. And then we got into the Amazing Spider-Man world, and at this point they're trying to copy what the MCU was doing and try to create their own universe.
World building, They were going to have a Sinister Six movie, weren't they, at one point?
Yeah, and there was going to be a Sinister Six movie that was going to be separate, but also there was going to be Amazing Spider-Man 3, and it was all setting up all these things.
Yeah.
But not doing any of them very well, because it was just that corporate more. But fans don't respond to that too well.
No.
Like, we love it when it's done well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Well, it's MCU.
MCU.
Yeah. And they've built it.
They've
built it. Brick by brick. They have built that. And they deserve that. And they deserve it. All works now.
Yes.
But, you know, 10 years ago, if you told me we'd have an Ant-Man movie, you know, 15 years ago, I would have, you know, laughed in your face, because I don't think that would have ever happened.
No. I mean, weirdly, 10 years ago, we almost did have the Ant-Man, you know.
Yeah, true.
And then, because I actually really liked Andrew Garfield's take on Spider-Man.
Yeah, I did. I like this. Again, there's elements of those movies that I like as well.
The crane sequence in the first Amazing Spider-Man is really great.
Really touching. Really got me that one.
Yeah, it's kind of up there with the train sequence in Spider-Man 2.
Mm.
But yeah, they just tried to do too much. And even now, even though we have Spider-Man in the MCU, Sony is still looking at the villains that they...
Exactly, yeah. They're doing their own movies. So Morbius has been filming in Manchester recently.
We had Venom. Mm. I'm kind of getting to the point that if it's a film that isn't in the MCU, I don't care.
Yeah, I get that. I definitely get that. Especially some of the movies. I mean, Hellboy did awfully recently.
Yeah.
Various other... Dark Phoenix. We went to see Dark Phoenix together.
We did.
You know,
it's a feeling of obligation.
Yeah, mostly obligation. And I didn't hate it, didn't love it.
I'm not going to watch it again.
I probably, won't revisit it anytime soon.
No.
But, you know, it was better than I expected because I expected the worst. Yeah. So that's something, yeah. I guess you could say. It's a bit positive you can say.
So I'm really hoping, because after we're recording this just before Far From Home comes out.
Yes, yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I've told the post-credits scene.
It's amazing, yeah.
Really sets up whatever Phase 4 is going to be.
Yeah, what's coming next. I've heard it's a great movie anyway,
yes.
And that you have to watch it again after you've seen it to kind of notice things throughout, which would make sense if it's a Mysterio-based, you know, things aren't what they appear sort of thing. And I've heard the credit sequences are amazing, but I've not heard a bad word about it yet.
No,
so
I'm
hopefully,
really looking forward to
fingers
it.
Crossed, it'll just knock it out of the park.
But that's it. I'm loving the stuff in the MCU, but outside of that, because those characters are so tied into Spidey.
True, yeah.
To not have them just
it seems weird.
Weird.
Yeah, like a Kraven movie or something like that.
Yeah.
It would seem just odd.
Well, you can't have a Kraven movie without Spider-Man because who's he going to hunt?
Yeah.
it's just Kraven sat there.
He hunts all the animal-themed villains. He hunts the rhino.
Yeah, but then you get to put... just stop it.
It's not going to work.
No,
it's not going to work.
Don't do it.
Right.
That's my
well, I want to talk a little bit about kind of the editorial decisions in Spider-Man as well, because the executives there can often make poor decisions. Mm-hmm. Quite famously, there was the One More Day storyline, which erased the continuity of Peter and Mary Jane's marriage, which was at that point, must have been 20 years. I think it's 1987, I think they got married.
They'd been hitched for a long time at that point.
So that's a lot of continuity to throw out the window. I mean, they kind of iron it out. I think it was one moment in time where they kind of ironed out the continuity between...
Yeah, they had... See, I love that run.
Yeah.
J.
Michael Straczynski.
Run.
It's incredible.
Really
it's incredible.
Good. But there are those two stories, particularly that no one likes.
Yeah.
One is...
Oh, Sins Past.
Sins Past.
Yeah, yeah.
When Stacey and Norman Osborn jump and had kids. Mm.
Yeah, and apparently took a virginity as well, because that's the thing that Peter Parker screams about in that. That must have been her first time. No!
Yeah, because that's the issue there.
Yeah, really. That has to be the worst thing.
Yeah, come on, Peter.
You know, and obviously, One More Day, where is he Catholic or Christian? I mean, you could argue that he's, it could be any religion, really. It could be Jewish, Catholic, Christian. You could argue, because there's nothing that's kind of outwardly, but I think it has been stated that somewhere in the canon that he is a Christian, I believe.
Yeah, although we do see oil a lot.
Yeah.
Stereotypically New York Jewish.
Stereotypically, yeah. But I believe, because I remember there's an issue where, I think Peter David wrote an issue where he meets God as well. So
there've been some...
The One Above All, I believe it's called.
Yeah, it's not as...
Explicit.
It's certainly not as important to his identity as Matt Murdock.
No, I don't think so. No, that's it's absolutely integral to Daredevil. But even then, that probably wasn't mentioned until kind of Frank Miller came along.
Yeah,
I believe. But what was my point there? Catholic. He was Catholic. So he's selling his soul to the devil to save Aunt May from the bullet, and the devil, Mephisto, who's basically the devil in the Marvel Universe. He's not explicitly, but whatever. It's a bit muddy. But he sells his soul and rewrites time and history. And then you get the Brand New Day storyline where, it's fresh. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with Brand New Day.
I think it was kind of important to maybe have a big jumpy on pop.
Yeah,
but it...
maybe going that extreme. I mean, you could have just gone, let's get a divorce.
Yeah. It doesn't... Every time a run ends, it has to be a complete reset.
Yeah.
Can he not just keep those things?
Yeah.
And
we like
very
that.
Quickly establish the world in the first issue of the new run.
Yeah, easy.
And people just go, oh, okay.
Yeah, exactly. You just go, that's it. That's over. New.
Yeah, there was a lot of clean slating happening. I think
they resurrected Harry Osborn as well. I remember that was a big deal. And got rid of all his organic spider powers because he was part spider by that point with the kind of, there was the totemistic kind of magic totem part of his storyline that we're going to mention, I think, coming up. If I remember one of your choices, but yeah, they kind of went, that's, he can't communicate with spiders anymore or have stingers come out of his arms. No. That's weird. Which I thought all of that was pretty kind of cool, you know.
Yeah,
but they got rid of that whole aspect. Anyway, I think we should crack on because time is getting on. We could talk all day about this. So that was your number four. So my number four is quite a recent addition to Spider-Man's Rogues Gallery from Brand New Day, in fact, that era. And he's going to kind of represent the subsection of the kind of organized crime element of Spider-Man. So I believe the organized crime, there's quite a lot of kind of, including the Kingpin and various other characters that represent kind of all the magia, not the mafia, because in the Marvel Universe, they couldn't call it that for legal reasons, or the fact that they didn't want, you know, the Black Hand itself didn't want to come and, you know, attack them or anything. But yeah, it seems to be really like missing from a lot of the movies that kind of don't focus on that element a lot. But in the early Spider-Man stories, that was like the main thing that the villains wanted. They wanted to be in control of the mobs. They wanted to run the crime. Like Green Goblin, that was all he was after initially. He was like, I'm going to run the mobs.
Yeah.
That's my plan. And they kind of show that again in the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon. And you've got Tombstone as the big man. And I quite like that they kept that element from the original kind of comics. And there's so many different kind of crime bosses or crime lords within that. But they don't kind of get the representation that I think they deserve. Because he is a crime fighter.
Yes.
I mean, there's a lot of his villains are, his classic villains are more kind of, you know, science accident gone wrong. They might not necessarily want to rob banks and stuff, but
they are robbing banks, it's so they can do more.
Exactly, yes.
Science.
Yeah, so like Dr. Octopus in Spider-Man 2, he just kind of, that's just a quick access to cash, he needs that, then uses it. It's a means to an end, the kind of lower class thug criminal element in the movies, which, you know, for better or for worse, that's how it is. But I'm choosing Mr. Negative.
Okay.
As my number four. Yeah. So this is Martin Lee. So basically he was a Chinese immigrant who ran a slave ship. So he was shipping Chinese immigrant slaves to the US. There was a ship crash.
Yeah.
And then he took on the identity of Martin Lee. I don't think you ever learn his real name, but Martin Lee is one of the dead slaves. And he starts his kind of, you know, makes his way to New York.
Yeah.
Then he's captured by the Magia, Silvermane, who's running the Magia, and he's trying to make a synthetic form of heroin, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the same kind of grouping as Cloak and Dagger. And they, through the same drug, they get their kind of powers over light and darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Lee gets his powers as well. So Cloaks, you know, can absorb people into the dark force dimension. Dagger throws out energy, kind of light daggers that can strip someone of their heroin addiction, one of their powers. They're kind of these kind of homeless, homicidal heroes, which I really liked. I've not really grabbed onto the series yet.
No, I've not watched the series.
But it seems to have got rid of all the elements that I like about Cloak and Dagger. But, well, I don't know 100%, so I'd have to watch it.
Yeah.
But maybe one day I'll get around to it.
Well, going back to what we were saying before about even Marvel TV, even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. doesn't really feel like it's connected to the MCU anymore.
No.
And I really enjoyed Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but eventually I just kind of...
I watched the first 7 or 8 episodes, and every single episode ended in a bomb, a countdown to a bomb going off. There's a gravity bomb. There's a bomb inside someone's eye.
Yeah.
That guy's going to explode as a human bomb. You know, I was just like, every episode is a bomb. And then I think the 9th episode, they started like, there was like some sort of Asgardian artifact that had...
They tied into...
Dark World. And that started to look good, but by that point I was totally switched off by it. There was like an early appearance of Graviton, and I was like, oh yes, Graviton, amazing, I'd love to see Graviton.
Then you didn't see him again for a couple of years.
Exactly. So I kind of, it's a bit too much. But anyway, but going back to Mr. Negative.
Yes.
Yeah, he's quite interesting because the drug kind of gives him these powers over darkness and light, but he's... In most comics, you kind of like, there's these split personality characters that develop like an evil side. You know, everyone's like the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde thing. They develop, I'm an evil now.
Yeah.
You know, and they fight against their original good half. This guy was evil, and the accident caused him to actually have a good personality, which is kind of like, again, the photo negative of what we usually get, which is really interesting. He started running this kind of homeless shelter called Feast. It's featured in the Spider-Man game as well. He's one of the big characters in the Spider-Man game, one of the sporting characters.
He was kind of the first villain that was revealed.
Yeah, the first big... I remember the when the trailers came out, that I was like, oh my God, Mr. Negative, what a deep pull. I love a good deep cut. But yeah, he can channel kind of this negative energy. He can absorb... I think he can absorb kind of life force and stuff from it and kind of corrupt people as well. He even kind of heals Venom's Eddie Brock's cancer and causes the emergence of anti-venom, which is like kind of a negative of Venom.
Yeah.
And he kind of causes Venom and Spider-Man to lose their powers as well, the current Venom. But yeah, really interesting character. And he then later on corrupts Cloak and Dagger because he has a similar power set and he can channel the energy through weapons. And he has these kind of group of his kind of, he kind of runs all the kind of triads and tongs within New York. So he becomes a real player in the kind of the mob world in New York, you know, rivaling even some of the bigger kind of more established mob villains like Tombstone or Silvermane or Hammerhead, you know, all those kind of characters. And I think it's just a really kind of unique, interesting take on an old idea. And the fact that when he transforms, he becomes like a negative version, like a photo negative of himself. But even then, you can't really kind of make out who he is. But yeah, it's just fascinating newer villain that Spider-Man's had in the last few years. And obviously, that's why they've used him in the game, because he's got a great power set, good, cool look.
Yeah.
Really quite interesting.
And for lack of a better word, isn't overexposed.
Yes, that as well. And you know, and it's good to see some more diverse Spider-Man villains as well.
Yes.
You know, because there is diversity there, but it's not as much as you probably would expect to be. But again, you know, they do kind of, over time, they have, you know, introduced villains, female villains, and various other ones in the past to kind of make up for
them. And heroes.
Yeah, heroes as well. Yeah, so many great Marvel female heroes, some of the best in the world. But yeah, he's a great character, and I can't wait to see some more of him or read some more appearances for him. But yeah, we spoke about all the kind of other kind of mafia villains. So the Rose is a good favorite of mine. He's the son of Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin. Yeah. Tombstone, Hammerhead, Silvermane, the Big Man, who's an early one in the 60s, created by Stan Lee, and the Crime Master as well. Yeah, that's me. That's my number four. Nice. Your number three?
My number three is the Big Wheel.
The Big Wheel. Okay. You've gone with the Big Wheel. Okay, all right.
Because when he asked me to come do this podcast, I was thinking about Spidey's villain roster and kind of who we know and who he considers underrated. And you've kind of got the big ones.
Yeah.
And then you kind of got like the more C-list ones.
Yeah, definitely.
And then you've just got so many... ridiculous one.
Yeah.
The
one note kind of
villains. Kind of, like, he's literally called Jackson Wheel and gets around in a big wheel. And that's it. Yeah.
That's all you need.
And I'll be honest, I don't actually read any comics he's in. Just when I was going through the list, that just struck me as that is a character that we need to see more of.
Definitely. I think I've read one where I believe he was dead, and in Ghost Rider they resurrected him.
Yeah,
and he's driving up Ghost Rider in a giant wheel.
Is it Stiltman territory, really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
he's kind of
literally they're gone. What's the idea? This I like to call it the Living Eraser, because that's one of Stan Lee's earlier creations.
Yeah.
And it literally is just an alien that would just wipe out people, just erase them. And it just, that was it. That was literally it. It's nothing else to that character.
It's amazing what high turnover of comics written by one person will produce.
Exactly. What can he fire this week? What's on my desk? Eraser. Yes, the Living Eraser.
Yeah. So I've kind of picked Big Wheel because we can talk about all the variations on goblins and venoms and clones, but he also has some very silly
I think of the Hypno Hustler is a good example that, and I think he appeared once and then kind of has appeared since as a joke villain, purely as a joke villain since then.
There's a few that seem to constantly be being reused as kind of their escape in a bank and the hero.
Yes. Plan. So it's like, it's not part of the main plot, but it's literally like,
this is how we're going to introduce
It's your James Bond style intro adventure.
Yeah.
This is the villain. He's got to stop him.
Yeah.
He's in a big wheel. Okay, we've got to stop that big wheel.
Yeah. And you know, so I...
Throwaway villain.
Those are the villains that make Spidey look good.
So. Yes. Yeah, they definitely do. I think, to be honest, even Spider-Man's worst villains are probably still better than most comic book villains elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
What Spidey writers have always managed to do is at least have a villain that will fit the story that's being told.
Yes, yeah.
So they are very good at thematic
kind
of choices.
Yeah, you're right.
But sometimes it is just a bloke in a big way.
Jackson Wheel. Thank you, Jackson.
Yeah.
Jackson Wheel. Wow. Basically,
I was so pleased with my other four choices. I just picked someone for
fair enough. Fun. Fair enough. Yeah. I like that because there's probably nobody who's more underrated than Jackson Wheel, the big wheel. Even the Rocket Racer, I think, is introduced during those kind of issues where he's introduced, and he's pretty lame on his own. And he's a hero, so you know he's got a rocket powered skateboard. You know, so it kind of makes sense for him to have a villain that's a giant wheel. Rocket powered wheel.
Moving on.
Yes. I'm just going to just compose myself from still laughing about giant wheels.
I do feel bad that
big wheels keep on turning.
I've put him so high on the list. Didn't want to start with the one that.
It's almost like the execs created him. So maybe the execs' fault.
Yeah. Yeah. Sony, when are we going to get a big wheel movie?
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, I'm so sick of seeing goblins and clones and all that. Where's the big wheel movie? Where's that?
Yeah. But what I am
go on.
What I am sick of is the current movies avoiding the traditional stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I love that we didn't
get
an origin again.
Yeah.
We've seen it so many times, we know it. It's as well known as Batman's.
Yeah,
origin.
Exactly. How many times can we watch someone get shot that we like?
But at the same time, you can talk about it.
Yeah. You can mention it.
And it just feels
you can say with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
There's been lots of nods and winks and tip of the hats, but I want to hear him say it.
Yeah.
Not only this will probably date this podcast very quickly, badly, but what I kind of hope if Mysterio in the MCU is indeed from
another universe,
I'm kind of hoping one of the post-credit scenes is Ben.
Uncle Ben?
Yeah.
Okay.
I because we've not had him.
I think that happened in the Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man that Peter David run.
Yes.
He introduced an alternate, because it kept turning up.
Ben, even though it's one of the big written no-nos of Marvel, don't bring Ben back.
They always do.
They'll find a way. And
Spider-Verse, he was one of the Spider-Men.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they did that in the film.
I mean, you could Spider-Men, the crossover between Miles Morales and Spider-Man. Mysterio is actually Mysterio of the Ultimate Universe as well.
Yeah.
He can travel, or he's created technology that would allow him to travel between two worlds, two parallel worlds, parallel universes. So it's not out of possibility that he could do that in this movie.
Because I'd actually love to see that story played out.
That'd be really interesting. And like, how do you... I mean...
Because the film seemed to be so much about Peter finding his identity and finding a father figure. What happens when Ben...
I'm a little tired of the father figures. I'm a little sick of father figures.
I'm kind of hoping that they will resolve that
something
in this one.
Just nip it in the bud, you know. We all want a father figure. We all have father figures. But I feel like Spider-Man's had way too many.
Yeah, I'm both simultaneously hoping they resolve it.
Yeah.
But I would also, just because I want to hear those words of great power and responsibility, is a bit where maybe Peter gets to see Ben. I don't know. It's not out yet. I'll find out on Tuesday.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll all find out. The world will find out.
You'll already know by the time you can just skip the last 5 minutes.
We'll see. However, there's the other end of the Mysterio spectrum where... it's all a lie. It's all an illusion. It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
I like to think that the original appearance of Mysterio is he's trying to replace Spider-Man. He's trying to, you know, he's the new hero, get rid of the menace, and becomes, you know, a hero. But obviously it's all falsified. It's all, you know, it's all an act. And I like to think that in a kind of Thunderbolts kind of way, like the original Thunderbolts comic, that there is a void left by the retirement, death, and missing in action of these various big heroes that Mysterio wants to step into that void, and that the Molten Man, Sandman, Hydra Man are all illusions.
Yeah, that's kind of what I think. Yeah. And I've also heard that I've also heard in some ways the film's going to do what you think it's going to do, but then it doesn't.
Yeah. It also maybe it's a bit of both. Maybe it's a little bit of both.
It's Mysterio. You can't trust him.
Yes, exactly. And I wouldn't when he's with the guise of. I mean, he's very handsome. He's very handsome.
He's very annoying.
But maybe that's not even his true face. Who knows? Who knows? It's all.
Maybe he is Uncle Ben.
Do-do-do. Twist.
This episode's just aged very badly.
They're like, what the fuck were you thinking? What were you smoking that day?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to crack on with my number three. So, talking about diversity earlier, I don't think we've seen enough female Spider-Man villains on the big screen, if any. Have you seen any?
No. They almost teased Black Cat
in
Spider-Man 2.
Mm.
And I think she'd have played a part in it. Mm.
And Hathaway was going to be the Black Cat in the fourth Sam Raimi one.
Yes.
But then she was Catwoman.
And then it was Felicity Jones.
Yes, that's right.
It was Felicia...
Hardy.
Mm. In Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Which there was already too much of in that movie anyway.
Yeah, but I think... They probably didn't want to do MJ again.
Yeah, fair enough.
After Gwen Stacy dies, they were probably going to set up her.
Yeah, possibly.
Who knows?
Or maybe don't give him a love interest. How about that?
What?
Crazy thought. How about that? But yeah, we were talking a little bit about kind of female villains. And I think Spider-Man's got a few pretty decent female villains. Some of them, again, are male versions, previous male versions replaced by female versions, which is fine, but I do like some characters that have their own thing, their own unique identity. So I've picked the very 1990s villain, Shriek, who was famously the kind of love interest of Carnage. So quite famously, she came to kind of relevance in the Maximum Carnage storyline. Very 90s. Story, big crossover between all the Spider-Man titles, lots of overexposure. I quite like that story. I'm fond of it. It's very much of its era, but I quite enjoy it, and the artwork's good.
Yeah, no,
it works.
All the Venom Carnage symbiote stuff is great.
I think after Maximum Carnage, it gets silly.
It's not as deep. I think people kind of treat it as this kind of big, deep run. Like, that was very, it was amazing. Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, of course. But it's not as kind of... I mean, there's a lot in the 90s to like. There's a lot that went on far too long and was very confusing and didn't really need to happen. But there's a lot of things that to like as well. So I've picked her because I feel like she was Marvel's attempt at creating that kind of Harley Quinn. Because I see the Joker is absolute chaos. I see Carnage as absolute chaos as well. Both homicidal maniacs.
Yeah.
Don't like nothing relatable about them whatsoever. No human qualities. Just horrendous, awful people. But they have love interests who are both quite insane and have their own stuff going on, but there's a kind of weird love there.
Yeah.
It's kind of a little bit abusive and wrong and, you know, but codependent. But yeah, it kind of, and that's their attempt. And she's a bit different. She started off, I think her name was, what's her name? I think it's Frances Louise Barrison. So yeah, she started off, she was an overweight young girl. Her mother would abuse her, make fun of her, mistreat her for that. And that kind of led her into a kind of falling in with a bad crowd, getting involved in drugs and kind of furthering her mental instability, you know, violence and what have you, selling drugs as well. And this kind of led to a kind of fixation with motherhood. So when she finally meets Carnage, she kind of puts this weird family together, including the Spider doppelganger. He's a kind of an offshoot from one of the Infinity War storylines.
Yeah,
he's a surviving, and he's got like six arms and, you know, insect eyes and venom style mouth, and this Carrion, who's this kind of zombie like clone of the Jackal. Or is it? No, I think it's another dude, actually. Anyway, yeah, so she has this kind of weird kind of fixation with motherhood, I think, because she's had such a poor growing up and poor, you know, family life. She wants to create that, but it's a very disturbed version of that.
Yeah.
She, speaking of Cloak and Dagger earlier, she was actually drug dealing and Cloak and Dagger found out and she was enveloped in Cloak's Dark Force dimension, and her powers, she had latent mutant powers.
Right.
And this kind of triggered those. So she has these kind of, she basically has control of kind of sonic and sound based, so she can create kind of bursts of kind of sound waves and thing. Kind of Banshee-esque, but kind of directly from her hands. But her more interesting power is that, like, hypersonically, she can affect people's moods. So so during Maximum Carnage, it's already bad enough having a team of homicidal villains, Demo Goblin, which is a literal demon. You know, you've got the monster doppelganger, you've got the zombie, you've got Carnage and Trig all together. That's all, you know, horrendous anyway. But she basically makes New York go mad. You know, even the heroes are affected by it as well. And they start, like, wanting to kill. That's what the whole story is about. It's like, Spider-Man, there's no way to stop this. I have to murder them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these feelings are making me want to do that. And it's only when Captain America comes along and goes, you know, do you want a hand? And then things kind of turn around. It comes very close to kind of murdering these several of these villains because she's affecting them. And it kind of makes them more unstable, and it just kind of ramps everything up. But she's not really been used recently. I mean, a little bit. It's always seems to be in association with Carnage. I would like her to do more of a Harley Quinn thing and kind of go off on her own.
Yeah, and kind of be freed from that.
Yeah, because, I mean, you don't just want to be known as, you know, somebody's girlfriend or love interest.
And because I think what's been important for Harley Quinn is kind of reclaiming her identity outside of the Joker, kind of
emancipating
from that kind of slightly abusive.
Abusive.
And being a much stronger kind of independent,
fully formed character. Yeah, exactly. And I think she has potential. I really do think she has potential. Yeah. And again, she's separate enough from the other villains, the male versions of these villains, that she could do her own thing. You know, I do quite like her kind of mentality and the fixation she has. So there's lots of possibility, and, you know, it's a terrifying idea, just, you know, somebody having this much power and being that unstable as well with it, and to do so much and to not really care only about these kind of weird kind of freaks and this freakish family. You know, very interesting. But yeah, there's loads of other really good kind of female villains, mostly kind of from the 90s kind of on. Yeah. There's Scream, who's like a female symbiote. I think she shows up in the Venom movie, technically. Menace, who is the female goblin from Brand New Day. Mm-hmm. Anna Kravinoff, who is Kraven the Hunter for a little while. Stunner, who's kind of she's the girlfriend of Dr. Octopus, which is a slightly overweight woman who has this virtual reality doppelganger who's super strong.
Yep.
Something like that. Caroline Trainor, who's the second Dr. Octopus we talked about.
Yep.
Francine Fry, who was recently became Electro. I'm not sure if the original Electra has come back yet. I believe they may have. I
can't remember, again, that's the problem with too many Spider-Man comics.
Too many Spider-Man. You can't keep up.
I can't keep up with who's dead, who's in prison, who's him.
who's this goblin? Who's that? Who's the symbiote on? Yeah, exactly. Shathra, who was from the J. Michael Straczynski run. She's kind of like this big kind of insect thing. Queen of Spiders, who gave Spider-Man a kiss. And then he develops those kind of organic web shooters. And then, you know, he mutated further later on.
Yeah.
Delilah, who's kind of a super strong henchwoman of the Rose, the late 90s. And Scorpia, who's a female version of the Scorpion. But yeah, that was my number three.
Yeah, nice.
So moving on to your number two.
My number two, well, going back to the J. Michael Straczynski run, because certainly when it starts is a really good run.
Yeah.
And my number two is Morlun.
Morlun, amazing choice. Almost made my list.
I would love to see Morlun in the movies, really. Mm. And if they are setting up a multiverse, you could get into the whole kind of
Spider-Verse, or
the web.
Yeah. Great Web or Web of Destiny.
Yeah, all this stuff. So I just really like that character. That kind of, I know some people are like, it changes Spider-Man too much. Cause I don't think it ever really did change it.
No.
It just acknowledged
that maybe something else.
Something else is...
Because in Straczynski's run, if I remember rightly, he says that it's not the radiation on the spider giving the powers.
Yeah.
It's actually the spider transferring those abilities
Yeah.
And then the radiation kind of confused that, kind of blocked it in some form.
It's an element, I think, of... I mean, Dan Slott went more into this kind of Web of Destiny stuff, but it's more... Yeah, it doesn't change who he is.
You've still got the spider powers.
Yeah, it's just more, it was an act of, it was always going to be you. It was always going to happen.
Exactly, it was a destiny thing, and it never really outright says 100% that Spider-Man got his powers mystically or magically.
No,
but
by getting those powers, he has now become part of this more mystical.
And I like that. I like that. It's almost like when Mark Waid introduced the Speed Force into, because before it was just like, these guys are fast, they're going to run, that's it.
Yeah.
So when he brought in the Speed Force, he linked all these characters together, all these kind of fast, super fast characters, and, you know, made it more interesting, much more kind of rich history, made it more of a family, the interconnectivity. And that's what they do with all the Spider-Man characters, Spider-Woman, all the Spider-Girls, you know, Spider-Gwen, all the alternate reality ones, you know, Spider-Man 2099, the clones, you know, it just links, and Madame Web links everything together. And it, you know, it makes it, kind of gives it this kind of legendary status almost.
Yes.
And this kind of, this epicness that was never really there. Because for, you know, back in the day, the original was just, you know, a 15-year-old kid, just got spider powers. And then he's just, oh, right, somebody else might have powers, you know. But it's come so far, and it's become this big epic kind of saga of the multiverse.
Yeah, and what's nice, you can do that and it still feels like he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Yeah, he's still out of his depth, totally.
Yeah,
depth.
So that run, particularly so that first...
Coming Home, I think it's called,
With...
Highly recommend that.
Yeah, really good. More than Ezekiel. I know we weren't talking...
Yeah, Ezekiel, but yeah.
Father figures, but Ezekiel kind of...
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Potentially falls into that a little bit.
That I would be up for. If we saw Ezekiel in film, I'd be really interested to see that.
Because at the moment, they just seem to maybe be setting up maybe another Sinister Six movie.
Possibly,
because it seems to be whatever thing they were setting up the last take.
Yeah.
Just kind of filters down into the next take.
Yeah, a little bit.
So I feel that's the way they're probably going to go for whatever follows Far From Home.
Yeah.
But I'd also love to see something completely unlike
anything we've seen before. And I think the J. Michael Straczynski run would be that, if they did a version, or, you know, because basically Morlun is from a family of kind of energy vampires.
Who pick beings who have this totemic energy. So if you did set up characters like the Rhino, well, they'd go after him as well.
Yeah, exactly. They could absorb the animal essence or power.
Basically, the reason I kind of fell in love was with Morlun was that when I read Coming Home, off the back of that, I started reading. It just so happened that all of the trades I was picking up all linked together.
Was that when he kind of died and came back with spider powers?
And then it all starts to link into the kind of web, so culminating into
Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
But
are they called the Inheritors? I believe they're called the Inheritors.
So there was Spider-Verse, but also Spider-Island. Spider-Island's a great event book.
I actually think Spider-Island is better than Spider-Verse.
Yeah, no, it's, I think, because it's more content than just fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Spider-Verse feels like the culmination of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It felt like
it's like an Avengers versus
X-Men. Yeah. When they did that, which felt like the culmination of 10 years.
Like House of M stuff, New Avengers.
Yeah, everything from House of M culminates.
It was Avengers Disassemble, House of M, and then onwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of all that together.
Yeah, and that was a culmination of that, and Spider-Verse felt like the culmination of that. And then
Definitely.
Then Dan Slott wrote the book for another couple of years.
Yeah.
But it did kind of force feel like, maybe that.
It's probably, I think Coming Home has probably one of the best battles, Spider-Man battles of the time.
Great fights. Yeah. He's completely impossible villain to defeat. So it felt like a character that really pushes Peter. Yeah. And
even when I was like back in like 2001, 2002, I was reading a magazine. I read magazines back then. Don't really read them now, but it listed like Spider-Man's greatest battles, and it was like Nothing Can Stop the Juggernaut, which I published on the podcast last week. But yeah, considering it's like 2001, 2002, that was on there, number one with a bullet.
Yeah. So it's just really good.
Yeah. And Ezekiel comes in, he kind of introduces the ideas of the totemistic power, the mystical, the spider and the radiation contaminating his powers, necessarily getting the full amount of spider powers that he should have. It's really fantastic. The artwork's great. It's John Romita Jr., who is probably one of my favourite artists out there. And he does a fantastic job.
That first chunk, especially of the Straczynski run, John Romita. So many great stories. I think artwork.
Some of the other stuff in the Straczynski run that came later is still good, but I think for me, it's the John Romita Jr. Straczynski stuff, which is the best.
Really good.
And I would follow that, get the following volume to that as well, coming home, because that contains the famous World Trade Center issue, which is absolutely heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's beautifully done.
Yeah.
The whole run has been collected now in three or four
kind of ultimate
collections.
Yeah.
The first two, although you do, I think the second one has Sins Past in it.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, it probably will.
Which is fine, read it.
Yeah.
It's a thing that exists.
You definitely get the volume that includes that and the conversation.
Yeah.
Because that is probably one of the best Spider-Man stories. Aunt May, at the end of coming home, discovers Spider-Man is Spider-Man. They sit in the park. And they just, the whole comic is just them talking about it.
It's
again, beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful. Go pick that up. But yes, Morlun, I think we've covered Morlun.
Yeah,
he's an absolute powerhouse and, you know, has really ingrained himself into the spider mythos.
Yes.
Considering he's still relatively recent.
Yeah, well, I also found him in a paperback. I realised Marvel did a load of paperback novels in the noughties that, I recall that, the 2000s, just when you hear it, the 2000s. And I just managed to pick up what was a Spider-Man. I thought, oh, this would be 20 pages. Oh, it's a Morlun story. Where he ends up having the rhino stay at his house because the rhino has his ass handed to him by
Morlun. Nice.
And so rhino goes to find Spider-Man. And
fair enough.
Help. I need your help.
Right, we're slowly running out of time, so I'm going to crack on with the next one.
We're quickly running out of time.
Yeah, we are quickly. You know, so I'm no, it's fine. This is good. This is good stuff. I just have to be aware of it. So my number two is the Scorpion. So this kind of represents the Dark Mirror that we were talking about earlier. There's so many kind of Venom comes under there. I mean, Dr. Octopus we talked about as well. Lizard is a good example as well. Science gone wrong and stuff. And I think Scorpion's really underrated. I mean, I'll be honest, there's not much character development that's been done with Scorpion.
No.
I mean, the most there's probably been was during when he was actually not the Scorpion, when he was Venom. Mac Gargan became the second Venom, I guess. I think it's the second Venom. So yeah, and he, you know, he had a lot more kind of during the Mark Millar Marvel Knights run. He's got this really creepy kind of private investigator vibe. He finds out who Spider-Man is, and he starts blackmailing him basically. And it's really quite interesting. But he is some villains you want as relatable, you know, like a Magneto or, you know, maybe a Dr. Octopus to some extent, you know. But there's some villains you just want to be fucking evil, just be right bastards. You know, you're never going to relate to the Red Skull because he's a horrible Nazi. He's the protege of Hitler.
Yeah, but I mean, I hope you don't relate to him. Really,
don't relate to him. Or like Mephisto, who is the devil. You know, you don't want to relate. You don't want to relate to them. And some villains, you just want that, and you just want that. And I think the Scorpion's a good example of that.
Yeah,
he's stronger than Spider-Man. He's faster. You know, he's because I think they said in the animated series that the Scorpion's a natural predator of the spider. You know, I'm not sure how true that is.
Yeah,
but you know, so he
probably is.
Yeah, to some point, I'm sure. But I think the tail is cool. It's got various weapons on it. It's usually his look does change quite often.
Yeah.
I think he's very much gone back to the kind of 90s look recently for the Nick Spencer run. His kind of green suit and
yes.
You know, simplified back to a kind of more of a costume. But I don't mind it. My favorite kind of thing about the Scorpion is not actually really the Scorpion itself. It's more his stories.
Uh-huh.
Because J. Jonah Jameson funded his creation and he feels he's betrayed him and he's gone mad because of the change in his body has caused him to go mad. And he blames Jameson, he blames Spider-Man. And always in the stories, it's got something to do with Jameson.
Yeah.
And whenever Spider-Man and J. Jonah Jameson are in a room, it's comedy gold.
Yeah.
It's just fun to watch them, you know, quip at each other, have a go at each other, you know, all that sort of stuff. J. Jonah Jameson is probably one of the best comic book creations of all time, easily probably in the top five.
Yeah.
You know, he's not necessarily a superhero, but he's a super character with so many flaws and has been represented in so many ways. Sometimes he's an outright villain. Sometimes he's a loving father figure. You name it.
And again, he's doing something really interesting with him at the moment. So
Does he know who Spider-Man is?
Spectacular Spider-Man, Peter went to him and
revealed it.
Again, it was kind of like the conversation. Yeah. They just had an issue where they talked about it.
Wow. I'd like to read that.
And then recently in the Nick Spencer run, there was a good, I think it was 2 or 3 issue story with J. Jonah Jameson, Spider-Man and Arcade.
Yes, nice.
Yeah, no,
nice.
It's really nice.
That sounds great. That sounds like a lot of fun. But I mean, like the, I think there's a second episode of the 90s show was The Sting of the Scorpion.
Mm.
And that it has, you know, J. Jonah Jameson is along for the ride and feels responsible, feels personally responsible.
Yeah.
Even quits the Daily Bugle at one point because he's blackmailed that he's created the Scorpion, a supervillain. And he leaves it to Robbie Robertson. And that's how interesting and so in-depth and so, you know, so many layers to J. Jonah Jameson. And I don't think we'll ever peel away how many layers that character has, but you know, he's the comedy relief or he's the outright villain, whatever you want him as, it works. It just works. And that's the best thing about the Scorpion stories. Like he's the challenge, but the real juice and the real fun part of the story is having J. Jonah Jameson and Spider-Man working together or spending time in each other's space. And he might even save Spider-Man or protect him in some form. And that's fascinating in its own way.
Yeah, it's great how he adds a facet, not just to Spidey, but he gives that depth to JJ.
Yeah, exactly. It's a nice spotlight. Because, again, Scorpion never really gets the spotlight. And that's I kind of think that's fine.
Yeah.
But you get that spotlight instead, which is worth visiting and rereading Scorpion stories.
Do you think they'll do that in the movies? Because obviously they did bring him into...
Matt Gargan is there. I mean, I don't think he really looks the part personally. He seems quite short and stocky. I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. I don't know. Maybe they'll do a Shocker type thing he's just got a tail.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to get some kind of Sinister Six.
Yeah.
Whatever follows Far From Us.
Fair enough. That's for me. That's, you know, the Scorpion. That's all really I want to say about the Scorpion. Other Dark Mirror villains I've included are the Fly, Tarantula, Kane, the Doppelganger, and the Spurious Spider-Man.
Nice.
So we're on to your... Was this your number two?
Number one.
Right, number one. Okay. What is your number one?
Spider-Man's most underrated villain, as far as I'm concerned, is Spider-Man.
Himself. Wow. Interesting take.
It's what makes Spider-Man such a great hero, a great character, is that depth and those other facets he has.
Mm.
But so often he is the cause of... I mean, he blames the Parker look, but it's just him.
It's just you.
You know, he's back with MJ in the comics now.
Yeah.
Feel like he's gonna mess that up soon.
Yeah.
Although they kind of made a big deal about it's not gonna be.
Yeah, it's not gonna be the same
temporary thing.
Yeah.
But you know, right down to his origins,
it's his own fault.
It's his own fault. He doesn't instantly learn to use his powers.
No.
Well, he didn't set
responsibly
out. He creates
his own problems.
His own problems, and he creates the situation that.
I mean, you could pick thousands of instances where that's the truth. Even not killing the Green Goblin and then him finding out about Peter Parker's identity.
Yeah.
Going to kill Gwen, knocks her off the bridge. He webs her legs, her neck snaps.
Yeah.
Just through the tension. So unless he let her drop, he wouldn't have caused her death, but he did. Mm-hmm. Either way, he would have caused her death.
Yeah.
You know, that's an example there.
To partly responsible for the events that led to Ben's death, Gwen's death, he gets businesses and then he loses them.
Mm.
You know, the whole reason he's been reset at the moment is he took all of the benefits that Superior Spider-Man gave him, but didn't really, and now he's lost them because he didn't earn them.
Yes, and that's kind of right, I think. And I always think that he'd probably be okay if Spider-Man didn't get in the way all the time. Like him being Spider-Man, that responsibility, you know, even like I've been watching this 1981 cartoon. He's like, oh, I really want to go on that date that I've stood up twice.
Yeah.
But I can't say no to adventure. You know, I can't. But there's so many times in the comics where he goes, this isn't my problem. This isn't my responsibility.
And he has tried to walk away.
And he tries to walk away. And I read the Clone Conspiracy recently, Dead No More Clone Conspiracy. Yes. And he says, this is going to ruin my company, but I've got to do it to save the world. And they're like, but I've got stocks in your company. He's like, don't care.
Okay. Well, that's it. He will ultimately always do the right thing. And that's why he's a great hero. That's why we love him.
Yeah.
But what makes him relatable is just like me, just like you, just like any of us.
Yeah.
His own worst enemy is himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll always figure out how to do the right thing in the end, but he often causes a lot of his own personal problems.
There's a great issue in the Dan Slott run. It's after Jameson's wife has died and he feels partly responsible, Marla Jameson. And he says, he makes this promise, he goes, no one dies. No one dies. And that's a heck of a promise to make.
Yeah.
Even to yourself.
Particularly when you're Spider-Man.
Exactly. And he relives all the people that he's either actually killed by mistake or by not being there or being linked to Spider-Man in some way. You know, stuff that he kind of had no control over, but he will still blame himself. And then somebody kind of questions him later on going, no, my rule is no one dies. And they're like, do you know how fucking stupid that sounds? Yeah. Do you know how idiotic and naive that sounds? No one dies and it's all on you. You know, but he's like, no, but he is still that kind of 15-year-old kid who fucks up and makes mistakes and you're right.
And that's what makes him such a great hero, is actually his greatest enemy
is himself. And again, he probably would be happy if not for that responsibility, if not for those powers. I mean, there's been times where he's tried to get rid of them. There's one attempt he grew an extra four arms.
Yeah.
You know, and then he had to deal with that as well.
Well, again, going back to the Nick Spencer run, he's involved in a mishap that splits him off into two versions of himself. One purely has all the spider powers and one is purely just Peter Parker.
Wow. That's interesting.
And it's a really good, really good story. It's fun, but ultimately, the side that gets to be with MJ all the time is fine.
Yeah, exactly. But the one who's Spider-Man constantly.
But he has all the responsibility, the other person has all the power.
Ah, interesting. You
know, spoilers as to how that resolves itself. But that's why he's so good. Is you learn these lessons and you face these things and they're actually quite relatable, even though they're...
I mean, someone once asked me, like, which superhero would you be? And I said, none of them.
Oh,
because Tony Stark's an alcoholic. The Hulk has mental issues. Ben Grimm is constantly a monster. The list goes on. Yeah. You know, Captain America is a man out of time. You don't want to be any of these superheroes. Sure, you want the powers. You want the powers. Mm-hmm. But you don't want the responsibility.
Yeah.
And there you go. And who's to say, you know, if you had powers, straight away you would be using them, you know, to get out of something, you know, or to get something for free.
Well, I just want to be a big whale. Gotta go around a big wheel.
Just rolling around. Good old big wheel. Good old Jackson wheel. I'm gonna have to read a Jackson wheel story tonight. I have to just to kind of satiate my need for Jackson wheel in my life. Jackson wheel. Oh my gosh. Right, well, before this podcast ends, I don't think we've got that much time, but I'm just going to slip mine in very quickly. Sounds very rude. About 5 minutes or so. So, my number one choice represents the horrific kind of horror monster-based characters in Spider-Man, and I've gone for Michael Morbius, the living vampire.
Yeah.
It was a scientifically created, by accident, vampire, which...
Yeah.
I believe back in the day with the Comics Code and the censorship that was going on at the time.
Yeah.
During the kind of early 70s, well, from the late mid 50s up to the kind of 70s, they couldn't actually do vampires, they couldn't do werewolves, couldn't do any horror based because of the kind of the McCarthy Seduction of the Innocent, the book The Seduction of the Innocent. So they came up with ways to sort of do it, but not.
Yeah.
So Morbius is a scientifically created vampire. He's trying to cure a blood disease he has, and lo and behold, doesn't work. He becomes a vampire. He's practically just the classic vampire.
Yeah.
That's the only difference, really. And he kills his best friend and leaves his wife because he's a monster.
Yeah, it's a full kind of tragic.
Yeah, tragic. These
kind of gothic.
Yeah, gothic tragedy. But there's always, but even in the 70s, it was in, I think it was called Fear magazine. He's more like an anti-hero, arguably. However, it works when you paint him as the villain, because when he goes full villain, you still believe it because of all the stuff that's happened. He's a very relatable villain, much like we were saying earlier with Magneto and Dr. Octopus and that. So when he's on the side of the angels, one kind of pang of hunger away from becoming a full-on villain again. Some great stuff in the Dan Slott when he uses him there as well. But yeah, I think he's a great villain. I think he's fun. I fell in love with him during the animated series and his plight there.
He was really well
portrayed
in the 90s.
Yeah, and I mean, he didn't bite anybody. He had these kind of sucker hands, which is fair enough. It's a kid's show, end of the day. He wanted plasma, not blood. But he's a great character. He's been... there's a movie coming out. He's obviously popular to a point, or they think they can adapt him in some way. We'll see if that's any good. But I think, in general, I think he's a cool character. I liked him in Rise of the Midnight Suns. He's really good. I think he might have even appeared in Maximum Carnage, I think they might have put him in there. To be honest, they threw every hero that wasn't selling in that book, Captain America and Iron Fist included. But no, I think he's really interesting, fascinating, fun, and however he's portrayed, it kind of just works. If he's in a miniseries, or if he's struggling, or if he's, you know, one of my favorite things in the world is the kind of the monsterverse of Marvel and the kind of Legion of Monsters, or, you know, the Howling Commandos, whatever their name is, all the kind of horror based. Man-Thing is one of my favorite Marvel characters of all time. Werewolf by Night, all those kind of characters, Son of Satan. I'm all up for more of that. I'm like, yes, give me a classic horror villains and stuff like Frankenstein, the Mummy and all that. I love that. And I think it's a really underrated portion of the Marvel universe. And actually, even Sam Raimi thought that he may do a Morbius movie at one point. Question, possibly, that he might do one.
Yeah.
And Blade 2, the villain in that, I think it's called Nomak, was supposed to be Morbius, but they couldn't get the rights. And that's why he's like a clone vampire. He's kind of genetically modified. So, yeah. So, but he's great. Go and read anything with Morbius in. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean, Spider-Man fighting a vampire, what's not to love?
Yeah. Well, that's it. That's what I'm kind of annoyed, though. As much as we're excited that the film was coming out.
Yeah.
But I want to see him team up in the Blade movie. But that can't happen.
I guess maybe. I mean, if they fully cross over the Spider-Man movies with, like, Venom or Morbius, that technically makes that in the same universe for me. Headcanon there, but... I mean, I would want to see him in a Blade movie. That he would work in a Blade movie.
I just want all my toys in one toy box.
Yes, don't we all? Well, that's the problem. You can't get to your PlayStation because of this. Yeah. You get them all in the one boxes. Box.
Yeah.
I think we have... Oh, I just want to mention the other monster villains I would have included. So Man-Wolf, who's J. Jonah Jameson's son. John Jameson, the astronaut who found like a gem on the moon and went, oh, this will make some nice jewellery.
Yeah, he's had a rough life.
He was a Man-Wolf and he was a superhero for a bit. He's not had an easy one. Stegron, the dinosaur man, scientist who works with the lizard and transformed himself into a dinosaur. I'd see that movie. I'd see a Jurassic Park meets Spider-Man movie any day of the week. I would have that. I'd take that.
I'd love a Savage Land movie.
Please. Well, I mean, they've got the rights back now, so we could do Savage Land.
Yeah.
I'd love to see Arcade and Murder World as well, do an X-Men movie, the Arcade and Murder World, because I think that would be cheesy and fun as anything. The Swarm, who is a Nazi scientist comprised entirely of bees.
No big wheel.
No, that's coming. It's The Swarm versus The Big Wheel. That's what I want to see. Flash of Titans. Carrion, who's like the zombie clone mentioned before. One of my really underrated, actually, is Vermin, who's basically kind of a rat man.
Yeah.
And he's featured quite heavily in Kraven's Last Hunt. He's really, really well. But yeah, I think that's everything. I think we've covered...
We've covered all of them.
All aspects of Spider-Man. Thank you for joining me for the Spider-Man month and our secret ball stories. It's been a lot of fun. I hope you've had fun.
I've had fun.
Would you like to come back?
I'd love to come back.
Have you got anything you'd like to talk about in the future? Movies or what have you?
Yeah.
Not off the top of my head, but yes, you've got stuff. You have a think. I've got lots of variations on this podcast, so I can send you the variations or you can listen.
How many Star Wars have you done?
You know what? Zero. So I think you're the man. You think you're the man for it. You come up with something unique and we'll do our own spin on it. We'll spin our own webs.
Yes, we will.
Yes, we will. So that is it from us. I'm just going to tell you where you can find me on the social medias. So it's Facebook. It's at Secret Boars in the search bar. Twitter, it's at Dan_Boars. Instagram, it's Spider Dan Secret Boars, all one word. Podcast will be available on Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and many, many more. Don't forget YouTube. That's a big one. Where can they find you, Sean?
They can find me at Sean Mason on Twitter. It's S-E-A-N. That's it.
That's it. That's a good... One's enough. That's good enough. Right, well, thank you for joining us again, guys, and we'll see you next time. Bye!
Bye!